Today, just like every Saturday, a man named Bob Persky woke up before dawn, got in his 12-year-old Honda, and drove across the state of Connecticut to see a friend, a man with brain damage who is serving a life sentence in prison. Persky has quietly devoted his life to showing how the criminal justice system is unfair to people with mental disabilities. And he says some of those people, like his friend, were convicted of crimes they didn't commit. NPR's Joseph Shapiro has Persky's story.
The phone rings a lot at Bob Persky's small gray house overlooking the train station in Darien, Connecticut. Sometimes it's a worried mother calling from somewhere around the country because her son with mental retardation has just been picked up by police. Lawyers call too, because Persky's a sort of one-man clearinghouse on people with mental disabilities who get caught up with the law. He directs callers to lawyers who've handled these types of cases or to advocates who can rally support. And Richard LaPointe calls, collect, several times a week from a prison in northern Connecticut. He's been in prison for 15 years.
At MacDougall Correctional Institution. To accept, dial 5. Your call is being connected. Thank you for using MCI.
Hello?
Hey, buddy. You're right on time. You're right on time.
Richard LaPointe is serving a life sentence. He was convicted of raping and killing an elderly woman. Persky says LaPointe didn't do it. On his office wall, above the telephone, Persky's got a picture of the convicted killer he calls his friend. Richard LaPointe is a small man with thick, square glasses and a wide face. He was born with Dandy-Walker syndrome. It's a rare condition that swells the brain and causes brain damage. Tonight, LaPointe's calling because he knows a reporter and producer from NPR are here, and he thinks a radio story about his case could set him free.
Okay, buddy.
That means it may maybe home, but...
That's called hope. That's called hope.
Huh?
That's okay, kid. I'm for you.
I said that may be home. Bye.
We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, well...
Okay.
Okay,
bye-bye. He still wants to know if this might mean he's going home.
Persky knows that to bring Richard LaPointe home, it's going to take some skilled legal work and perhaps some extraordinary DNA evidence. So Persky's working on it. He's found lawyers and supporters for LaPointe. And at the age of 76, Persky's barely slowing down.
I have a government grant to do what I do for as long as I live. It's called Social Security. And quite frankly, I can live on that. We've always broken even every month.
Bob Persky's house is small and full of boxes, stacked up neatly and packed with files, in a corner of the living room and at the top of the stairs to the second floor.
Well, I got boxes all over in the hallway, so you have to watch it.
Each of these boxes tells a story about someone with a mental disability who ended up in prison or even on death row. Persky helps the guilty trying to avoid execution, and he seeks to free those he believes are innocent.
Well, there's one on Johnny Lee Wilson, Johnny Paul Penry, Joe Arity, and down here is Richard LaPointe. You must let me show you the basement. I've got all of the papers on the case. I mean, it's humongous.
Bob Persky has spent most of his life helping the disabled.
You know, people call me a bleeding heart, but I've seen a lot to bleed about. And it does work on me. It does work on me.
He started 45 years ago as a Protestant chaplain at a state mental institution in Kansas. When residents died, they were buried in graves without names, just numbers. Usually no family, no friends came, just the undertaker carrying a simple coffin, and Persky to conduct the funeral.
So be me and the undertaker. We'd ride out in the hearse, and he'd say, "Now, this guy was a nonentity, Bob. Let's just get this done, and we'll get back, you know." And that pissed me off, so that the book of prayers, the biggest book of prayers I found was an Episcopalian book, and I read that sucker one after the other after the other.
Persky quit his job as a pastor and became a writer and advocate. In 1991, he wrote Unequal Justice, a book about people with retardation in prison. By presenting case after case, Persky showed how certain problems were common, like the way a man with mild retardation will do whatever it takes to hide it from others. One of the best ways is to rely on authority figures, like protective parents and teachers, and also police. But that's the wrong thing to do when someone is suspected of a crime, because it can lead to a false confession. Right after the book came out, Persky got an anonymous phone call. The caller said there was a false confession case right there in Connecticut. That was the first time Bob Persky heard about Richard LaPointe. It's Saturday morning at 7 when Persky starts his weekly trip to visit LaPointe in prison.
You'll be back about noon or so.
Persky says goodbye to his wife Martha and to the tiny dog they rescued from the pound.
Goodbye, Wolfie. Take care of your mom.
Persky looks like a gray-bearded Johnny Cash in black jeans and black denim shirt. He heads outside. It's still dark. Persky drives 4 hours round trip just to spend 1 hour with Richard LaPointe. It's not just because he thinks LaPointe is innocent, but because LaPointe's vulnerable and alone. After he was convicted, LaPointe's wife and young son in Manchester, Connecticut, abandoned him. There are few cars on the highway at this time of the morning. The trees are shrouded in fog. Persky recalls the first time he saw Richard LaPointe at the murder trial in Hartford.
So I showed up on the first day of his trial, and there was nobody sitting behind him. Everybody was sitting behind the prosecution table. They were going after what you might call the monster of Manchester, this little, soft little guy.
After that first day, Persky got on the phone. And by the end of the trial, LaPointe's side of the courtroom was filled with supporters. Persky felt sure the man was innocent because he'd read LaPointe's confessions. The murdered woman was Bernice Martin, the 88-year-old grandmother of LaPointe's wife. Police in Manchester were stumped. They couldn't find the killer. At the time, LaPointe had steady work washing dishes at a restaurant. When police came in, he liked to talk to them.
He was known to come out of the kitchens where he worked and always visit with the police officers. Very nonchalantly say, "Am I a suspect?"
That kind of behavior made detectives wonder about the odd little man with brain damage. 2 years after the murder, police brought him in for questioning. It was the 4th of July, 1989.
He walked out of a picnic that he was going to have with his son and his wife. Go watch the fireworks. 4:30, they picked him up and they asked him to come down so that he never had the celebration.
At the police station, detectives confronted LaPointe with evidence they said proved he was the killer. They showed him charts on the walls listing fingerprints, eyewitnesses, DNA. It was all a trick. There was no such evidence. But after a few hours, LaPointe signed confessions, three of them. One said, "If the evidence shows I was there and that I killed her, then I killed her, but I don't remember being there." Police figured an innocent man would not confess to a crime he did not commit. But Bob Persky says someone with a mental disability will, because by going along, they think they can hide their limitations.
I've worked with these people all my life, and I saw all of these traits in here. As I read it, I could say, well, yeah, that of course Rich would say that. You know, of course Rich would say, well, if you said I did it, then I did it, but I don't remember being there. And of course he would be trying to give them what they want to hear.
Later jurors said that, given the absence of physical evidence, it was the confessions that convinced them to convict. State prosecutors say they remain convinced that LaPointe killed Bernice Martin, that he was smart enough to know what he was doing when he signed the confessions, and that he's had plenty of chances, two trials and an appeal, to prove his innocence.
Exit only, you're where you want to go.
Richard LaPointe's home now is McDougal Correctional Institution. It's a new building of brick and barbed wire at the end of a lane lined with trees. Prison officials would not let us go in and observe Persky's meeting with LaPointe, so we parked the car at the edge of an ice cream factory down the road and met Rosemary Hargrave and David Scott. They're part of a group called the Friends of Richard LaPointe. Dozens of people all brought together by Bob Persky. Hargrave visits LaPointe every Wednesday. She's teaching him to read better. Scott comes twice a week. He counsels Richard about how to make good choices and avoid trouble in prison.
Where would Richard be without Bob?
Probably nowhere.
Loss.
Yeah.
And there are so many other Richards that Bob has gotten involved with, seen through to the ends of their stories.
And gotten, you know, other people involved.
The Friends of Richard LaPointe helps others now, too. One spin-off group set up a network of volunteer lawyers all over Connecticut. Scott says that at any moment, they're ready to go to a police station and represent a mentally retarded person who's being questioned.
With the idea being that, you know, what happened to Rich, if we can get a lawyer there early on, it's not going to happen to somebody else. And a lot of that came about because of Bob. And we have a, you know, 1-800 number that, and what we're doing is giving people cards that say on it, this is my name. If I'm arrested, please call.
Visiting time is over, and Persky gets back into the car to head home. He and Richard LaPointe have talked about the usual, the weather, the Red Sox, and LaPointe's chances of going free. Those chances may come down to a tiny piece of evidence. It was found 15 years ago at the crime scene, close to the body of Bernice Martin.
There was a pubic hair that was found in the apartment.
Paul Castellero is Richard LaPointe's new lawyer. He says before, DNA testing wasn't good enough to analyze that hair. But just recently, LaPointe's legal team sent the hair to a lab.
That pubic hair was tested, mitochondrial DNA testing, and that came back to be someone other than the victim, Bernice Martin's, or Richard LaPointe's. So we think that's a fairly significant finding. And we've all along had a suspect.
3 days after the Martin killing, another man was arrested for a similar sexual assault nearby. It's a long shot, and Castellero will need to convince a court to order a test of the man's DNA. There have been lots of other long shots in this case, and each time Bob Persky's hopes have been raised and then dashed.
We always hope to get good news. Always. We can't not do it. And it isn't just on faith, because we just know there's got to be some evidence there.
Persky's mission is to keep Richard LaPointe hopeful, too. On this day, when Persky gets home from visiting LaPointe, it's a beautiful Saturday afternoon with a cool breeze blowing. Orange poppies are blooming in the front yard, but Bob Persky goes inside, turns on his computer, and gets to work. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
Susan Stone produced our story. For more on Bob Persky's research on false confessions and mental disabilities, go to our website, npr.org.